Could I have my first slide? Thank you. Is that the first slide? I don't think so. Here we go. So very often we will have an approval process for a device that is tied into a post-approval study or a registry. And so what the post-market should give us is assurance of safety and effectiveness that we have now established in the randomized pivotal trial, but we need to answer some other questions. For example, the training program. We talked about the expertise needed to implant the devices. The longer-term results, not the 1 year, but maybe the 2, 3, or 4 year down the line, or rare events that happen, just like that one in the drug world, that we see drugs that get out into the public domain and then other problems are found. I can give you several examples. Validate surrogate outcome measures, and the advisory panel will usually put out concerns about certain questions that are asked that can be answered in the post-market. The post-approval studies are ordered at the time of approval, and I think in the time that I have been there, I have seen a tightening of getting those post-approval studies done and done appropriately with good planning and with a good strategy for analysis. In general, we are looking at the long-term performance, including the changes that happen in devices that we have just now talked about. The real performance, now that clinicians have their hands on a new device, the training programs are handed to the agency and they're reviewed at the time that the pivotal study is reviewed. And here's a good time to start thinking about subgroup performance, for example, enrolling more women, minorities, and decreasing disparities of care, and some outcomes that may have been of concern to the panel in particular concerning the safety. The public health value of this is that the device will enter the real world. It contributes to better design of other studies for us in the future as we see devices that are similar. And it really prioritizes, there's a whole section of epidemiology within our device section that helps design and works with the companies. So the post-approval studies, like any other study, has a hypothesis. There's a study design and study groups, including a control group. Endpoints are clearly placed, a sample size is projected, and there's a statistical analysis plan. The duration of follow-up is decided on and a follow-up schedule with reports consistently into the agency, and the study timeline is assessed. I'm just going to show you a couple of brief examples. The HeartMate 2 as a bridge to transplant, or what we call BTT, was approved in 2008. The post-approval study included things like quality of life assessment tools, we've been talking about it, functional status instruments, differences in gender with body surface area and small individuals, particularly women. It was a prospective, non-randomized observational study in subjects taken from the Intermax registry, and I'm going to talk briefly about registry. The total sample size was 338 patients. The primary hypothesis was that the success rate would be no worse than 10% lower than in the control group, and where success was defined as patients who were adequately transplanted or explanted because of myocardial recovery, which we all know is very rare, or supported on the device for at least 180 days. The enrollment was completed. There were no safety signals, and the findings of that post-approval study has now been placed into the labeling. So what the sponsor benefits from is a modification of the labeling. The labeling gets updated with the new information. Something similar has been going on with the HeartMate 2 for destination therapy, or DT. That was approved in 2010, very, very similar in the collection of data. Also, obviously, prospective, non-randomized, using Intermax registry of 247 consecutively enrolled patients as destination therapy. a hypothesis was established, clearly again now having done the bridge to transplant post-approval study. And this is done on an iterative basis with the company at the table and with the Division of Epidemiology and of device approval. So we think that post-approval studies are very, very clear and need to be done, that registries may serve as very efficient systems to ask some of these post-approval questions and changing the labeling. I want to move quickly into Intermax. The NIH is sitting here. I've been involved in Intermax since we started it. It's called the Interagency Registry for Mechanically Assisted Circulatory Support, and it is a venture of the NHLBI, who has been funding this, the Centers for Medicare, and the FDA. It's included 141 hospitals, 10 industry partners, a whole group of clinicians, mostly in academic medical centers. Both pre-market FDA and post-market FDA is at the table. NHLBI is our sponsor. CMS sits there, particularly in the issue of destination therapy. So Intermax is a registry that was put together to answer the questions of LVADs now coming into the market and being used by clinicians. So the goals are to facilitate patient selection rather than just using the New York Heart class. A new classification has been built by Dr. Stevenson and Jessup, which is excellent, really describing what the patients look like, the crash and the burn. And anybody who's in this field knows what crash and burn looks like. So they're highly, highly descriptive. It will also give us clinical application guides and the evolution of the next generation. As of October 22, there are 141 activated sites. There are 8,000 patients in the registry. The plan has been extended, and this shows these are the hospitals coming on board, and these are the patients being included. And you can see by the approval, here's the HeartMate 2, the continuous flow device for bridge to transplant, and the rapid uptake of that device. And then when the HeartMate 2 was approved for destination, the very rapid uptake there as well. Under the very able hands of the University of Alabama at Birmingham Statistical Group with Jim Kirkland, the number of patients has increased tremendously. Want you to focus on the continuous flow intracorporeal pump. The majority of the data now are sitting around the continuous flow pump. It allows analyses such as these to look at long-term mortality, to look at complications. Some of the complications and adverse events are not the same as the definitions of the FDA, but they have been worked upon together. Now, like any other registry, we love it, but there's a lot of gaps. And some of the gaps are exactly what we've been talking about. Health status questionnaires are not being filled out by everyone. The nursing primarily that's entering these data are very, very busy centers. They are also giving data to UNOS and to other registries. So very often the health status, and we are now using the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire, does not get filled out. The functional capacity data that we have is still limited in things like the six-minute walk. The last peak VO2 trial that we did actually looking at consistently the exercise function of LVADs was in the early 2000s. And we now need to really start to consider the less sick patients that will be entering into the Revive-It NIH trial and that are now being entered into ROADMAP, which is a HeartMate, Authoratech, very similar trial in the less sick population. So we have our downsides, but still a very important registry that has accomplished much And I think groundbreaking in the fact that all the agencies have been sitting at the table together, and we thank the NHLBI for funding this. I believe that's my last slide.